Final case this morning is 06-2289, State of Ohio versus Daniel Fugate. For the appellant, Mr. Paul Skandelis.
That's correct.
May it please the court, counsel. I will endeavor to reserve 4 minutes for my rebuttal. Your Honors, one proposition of the law is presented to the court today on behalf of the defendant appellant, Daniel Fugate, and that is that a defendant who is sentenced on multiple charges is entitled to credit for days actually incarcerated against all concurrent terms. The failure to award jail credit against all concurrent terms violates Revised Code Section 2967.191 and the Equal Protection Clauses under the state and federal constitutions.
Mr. Skandelis, before you begin, would you clarify whether your client was being held in prison, or being held in jail, rather, pending trial on both of these charges, or multiple charges, or if there was a situation where the individual was being held on bond on one charge and the remaining charges were what we call OR?
Your Honor, he was being held on both charges. There still is a question about matters that are outside the record on whether there was a bond set on the probation violation for a period of time. That case was not before the court since he received jail credit against that term. The only case that was being appealed now is the case in which he received no jail credit. So to clarify your question, he was being held on both charges. Now the question whether he was being held on bond on both charges is a matter that is unclear in the record before this court and would require me to go outside the record on that.
But isn't that crucial to our determination here, because the statute talks about the credit being applied when an individual is awaiting trial in custody, and if an individual is given an OR bond when there are multiple charges, technically that individual is not being held on a second charge.
It is my understanding that he was not out on a recognizance bond on any of the charges. He was actually held on both cases. He was held at the same time in both cases. The state would argue that because these are different incidents, because the charges arise from separate incidents, then he is entitled to credit for time served only against one of the concurrent charges. But it is clear that he was being held on both cases. On the probation charge, which was based upon the probation violation, was based upon the filing of allegations or the statement of violations alleged that he had committed the offense for which he faced trial. We know from the record that following his conviction, his counsel did tell the court that it waived the probable cause finding on the probation allegations, and he admitted to the probation violations. At that time, the court proceeded to sentence him both on the probation charge and the new charge. But up until that point, he was held on both cases.
But they only awarded the 216 days to the probation violation case.
That is correct.
Which is the case that was the overriding reason for his incarceration, or his detention.
We would argue that he was actually being held on both charges.
But his probation violation was for an older case, and he was out. And then he committed additional crimes that triggered a probation violation, correct?
That is correct.
He was picked up on the probation violation.
That is correct.
And then he was being held on the probation violation charge as the state prepared the other two charges against him and they proceeded to trial.
That is correct. He was arrested on the new felony offense or offenses.
After his probation violation?
No, the probation violation was based upon the filing of the new felony charge. He was held on the new felony filing, and then he was held almost shortly thereafter on the probation violation, which was triggered by the filing of new charges.
So he was originally arrested and put in jail for the new charges, not for the probation violation?
That is correct. That is my understanding of how the scenario plays out.
Now, if you had someone who had two charges, and one was he was held on bond and could not make bond, and the other had received a recognizance bond, Would you argue in that case the judge has the ability to assign the jail time credit to one?
Our argument certainly loses validity at that point, because there is no equal protection violation. The equal protection violation arises if he is put in a position where he is disadvantaged against an individual who can post bond and secure his release. If he's not being held on the second charge, then he certainly cannot argue that he's entitled to jail time credit. And it is very clear from the statute and the administrative rule that if an individual is held on a charge, then he is entitled to jail time credit against any sentence arising from that charge.
But isn't it crucial to our analysis here to know what the sequence of bonding is in this matter? Whether a bond was set for the two new, I'm going to call them the new charges, new crimes, which he was ultimately convicted of, okay?
Yes.
And then you've got the PV, probation violation. If a bond was set on those new charges and he's still being held on the probation violation, and I'm not sure that we've got that information before us, do we?
It's discussed at the sentencing stage of the transcript, where the court indicates the parties agree that he was being held on both charges. The prosecution requests that the jail time credit be awarded on the probation violation charge and not on the new case. So the judge proceeds to impose.
Was there any objection to that?
No, there was not. Defense counsel didn't raise that issue at the time of trial.
But Mr. Skandalis, if we look at the record, will we be able to tell what bonds were set on these multiple charges?
The amount of bonds,
or the type of bond,
we would not be able to tell. The only thing that we can tell from the record is that the defendant was held on both cases.
Oh, you mean that he was in jail at that
yes.
time, but that doesn't mean that he was being held on both charges. I mean, if he has an OR bond and he's in custody, he may be in custody solely because of the other matter. Mm-hmm. So I think we have a deficiency here that may be a big problem.
Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree. I think what the record does show is that the parties do agree that he was being held. He was actually being incarcerated on both charges. Now, it's unclear the type of holder that was on the probation case, or certainly the type of holder. I believe the bond probably on the new felony charges might appear in the record that is before the court. Now, the state would argue
the fact that he had a bond on the two additional charges, you know, we need to know, did he just not attempt to make bond because he had the holder? And it would have been an exercise in futility, or maybe to make bond there because he was still going to be held on the PV.
I would respond in several ways. First, I would argue that that issue is probably less relevant, because if he is held on high bond on one case and a lower bond on another case, his indigency still keeps him incarcerated, and that would be an equal protection violation.
Well, but as Justice Lansinger said, what happens if it's an OR?
If he is still held because he has not secured his release on a case, but is still actually held on that case, we would argue that the statute and the administrative rule require that he be given jail time credit since he is being held on those cases. And it entitles him to jail time credit against a sentence imposed on those cases.
Even if we don't have that record, we can still make the principle of law and remand it to the court to determine.
Actually, that was my request. There are a lot of issues that play into this that are certainly not before this court. There are some additional charges that pop up at different times, misdemeanor charges for which he might serve minor periods of incarceration in terms of a sentence. He would not be entitled to jail credit on those. The record as to what happened to him was not terribly clear from what appeared in the trial court. And to go even off the record, it would be difficult for me to explain to you all the intricacies, the interplays of all these multiple charges.
Well, Mr. Skandalis, let me go to something different if I can for a moment before your time expires.
Thank you.
The statute says, would it make any difference if he were sentenced consecutively as opposed to concurrently for purposes of your argument? in our consideration?
Yes, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. We argue that the sentence is reduced, the aggregate sentence is reduced, which means that if he received consecutive sentences, then the jail time credit is applied only against one, not both.
Your client was sentenced in this case for a violation of a community control sanction, am I correct?
That's correct.
And that was a term of 1 year?
I believe that that is correct, and then 24 months on the...
And then there was a 2 year for the conviction arising out of the burglary, and was the theft nollied?
I believe it was. It merged with a greater offense.
So the fact is, your client was sentenced on the community control violation and on the burglary. But
that
they
is
were
correct.
Concurrently imposed.
That
so
is
the
correct.
Aggregate term was 24 months.
That is correct.
And we're talking about the credit then of the 213-day pretrial detention as against the 24-month period.
That is correct.
Or as against the 12-month sentence only, and then your client begins the 24-month period.
No, since they're imposed concurrently, he would serve a full 24 months.
He's only going to do 24, so he's going mm-hmm. to get 213-day credit against the 24 in any event.
No, he would not.
Just the 12.
And because he's only going to get it on the 12, he has to do the full 24.
That's correct.
Okay. So that is the effect of a consecutive sentence, is it not?
No, Your Honor.
That's not. How would a consecutive sentence operate then in your view?
In my view, then he would serve 24 months plus the 12 months for a 3-year term. It is the aggregate then.
Where
would
the credit
reduced.
Come if he were given jail credit on a consecutive sentence?
It could be reduced. Either one of the terms would be reduced. We would argue that the case law requires and actually equal,
well, if
equal
either
protection.
One of the terms would be reduced, that's exactly what you have in this instance, isn't it?
No, I'd respectfully disagree. If a defendant is charged with multiple terms, to give you a separate example, multiple terms arising out of 3 incidents, and he receives 1 year for each of those terms, he's held for 6 months in jail while awaiting trial and sentencing. That 6 months then, under the state's analysis, would be subtracted from one of those concurrent terms, assuming that he receives 3 2-year concurrent terms. That would have the effect, it actually would have no effect. It would not diminish his sentence, his actual sentence, what he serves day for day, by a single day. If his sentence were imposed, if the 3 2-year terms were imposed consecutively for a 6-year term, then you would apply the jail credit against one of the sentences and reduce the aggregate. It is the aggregate that we are targeting, and I believe it is the aggregate that he is entitled to have reduced by his jail credit. The difficulty here is that, actually there are 3 different arguments in our favor here. The difficulty is that if he does not receive jail credit against each of the concurrent terms, his jail credit is rendered meaningless. So if we have individuals who are charged, let's say in the same offenses, who are co-defendants and are arrested for committing offenses, crimes arising out of multiple offenses, multiple incidents. One defendant is held, is incarcerated because he does not have the means of posting bond. And the second defendant is released while awaiting trial because he has the means to post bond. They go to trial, they're each convicted of 3 separate incidents, or offenses arising out of 3 separate incidents, and they receive 3 2-year terms. The court imposes them concurrently. So each of them was facing 24 years. The defendant who was held while awaiting bond, under the state's analysis, would only have one of those terms reduced, which means he gets no jail credit. The person, his co-defendant, who is out while awaiting trial because he has the means to post bond, has served no time, and yet he's facing the exact same time. This is the circumstance that was considered abhorrent by the federal courts in Workman versus Cardwell and White versus Gilligan. And we would argue that it is a violation of equal protection. We would also argue it is a violation of the administrative code provision and also revised code section 2967.191 or 161, because they very clearly state that you get credit for time served. In the case of the statute, the prison term shall
be
reduced.
That's where I was trying to take you, Mr. Candelas, because the code says if a prisoner is serving two or more sentences concurrently, the parole authority, which is required to reduce the total number of days the prisoner was confined for any reason out of the offense for which the prisoner was convicted and sentenced, shall independently reduce each sentence for the number of days confined. Isn't that the obligation?
Yes, it is.
Why wasn't that followed in this instance? How does the trial court overrule that precept?
I don't know how. That has been our position, and certainly that is not the position of the 10th District and several other appellate districts. Thank you.
Thank you. Kimberly Bond, representing the state of Ohio, Franklin County Prosecutor.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. Waiver is fatal to this defendant's case. He failed to provide an adequate record to address this issue. There are some things I would like to clarify that are in this record, though. First and foremost, bond was set in this case, and I'm pointing toward record 4 of the appellate record. In addition, there was a bond hearing set for October 18th of 2005. I don't know for sure if there was a hearing on that, but there certainly is a hearing date. No transcript was provided.
So, counsel, we have how many counts and how many bonds?
We have, I believe it was 3 counts and 3 bonds.
3 separate bonds. So, technically, then, this defendant was being held on 3 separate cases.
He was held on 2. My argument is he was essentially held on the revocation case. It's a fiction to say he was held on everything. He violated probation. That's what attached. That's what he was being held on.
Well, but the idea of separate bonds being issued means that if for some reason there's a fatality in one of the counts and it's dismissed or whatever, the remaining bonds are going to be still vital and have to be set before an individual is released on the other 2 charges. So that's why I'm saying I think the statute that talks about the credit talks about the individual being held, and to me that means on a bond.
He is being held. I'm trying to distinguish between the revocation case and the new charges, the burglary and theft, which he was ultimately convicted of.
And the revocation case, did it arise out of the burglary and theft?
No, in fact,
that's why there was a revocation.
The revocation case came first. He was convicted for receiving stolen property, and he was sentenced to community control. He did not appeal from that, so I can't go off the record and talk about what happened in that case. That case came first. A week later, after being placed on community control, he committed these new offenses and was brought in.
So it's these new offenses that caused the revocation of community control that put him in jail, or at least.
Well, I can't answer that definitively because we don't have the record of the revocation case before the court. We know from sentencing that, in fact, these felony violations did cause a revocation, but there could have been other reasons for a parole officer to place a revocation, place a holder on this individual. If drugs had been involved, alcohol, any number of reasons could have also been in play. That case is not before the court.
So, counsel, are you saying that it really doesn't matter because your strongest argument is waiver here?
I believe waiver does apply. It applies to all types of sentencing issues, and I think it should apply in this case as well. I also believe that his argument fails on the merits. Jail time credit is offense specific. It has been continuously treated that way throughout the state, and case law supports that interpretation of the statute. Jail time credit is a singular entity. It cannot be multiplied against numerous types of cases. This court, in fact, in Moss v. Sabora, held that jail time credit for being held on multiple cases in different jurisdictions, you can't multiply that jail time credit against the sentences in each case, even when it's concurrent. This defendant shouldn't be treated any differently. Just because he committed his offenses in one county as opposed to an offender who commits his offenses in multiple counties, he shouldn't receive a benefit for that. defendant wants a rule, in fact, that would put him in a better position than other offenders, and that, in fact, is a violation of equal protection. Revised Code 2967191 is very clear, and it says that he gets jail time credit for any reason arising out of the offense for which he was convicted and sentenced. He received the jail time credit against the probation violation. The burglary and theft did not arise out of his RSP conviction.
That's not what the statute says. It says he shall be, actually it's a directive to the Department of Rehabilitation mandating a reduction of the stated prison term by the total number of days the prisoner was confined for any reason out of the offense for which he was convicted and sentenced.
Any reason arising out of.
And was he convicted and sentenced on the burglary?
He was convicted and sentenced on the burglary. The argument is that...
Your argument is he wasn't detained pre-trial on the burglary. He was detained pre-trial on the violation of community control.
The holder,
am I right or wrong?
Yes, the holder trumps the other charges.
So even though there would be multiple reasons that an individual would be incarcerated pre-trial, in your view, that individual would only get credit for one?
That's correct. One case, one bundle. His burglary and theft offenses were a separate bundle.
Well, counsel, let me ask you, say they decided not, they picked him up on a parole violation, and that was the overarching reason for him to be in jail. And then they try the two cases, as they did here, the burglary and theft, and he's found guilty. And then for some reason, the parole violation is not further prosecuted, all right? It's dropped. And he is sentenced on both of these theft offenses. What do you do with the 214 days under that scenario?
I believe under that scenario, he would be entitled to it on the burglary and theft because
on
the
both of them simultaneously.
If they're concurrent,
they are.
The
example,
because that case is a bundle; those sentences were concurrent. It's exactly what has happened at his second sentencing hearing. He received 50 days of jail time credit against the concurrent sentences for burglary and theft. They're going to top that off the bottom of it, I assume. And so he's not going to be spending 2 years in prison on burglary and 1 year on theft concurrent. It would come off both of those. But that's because that's treated essentially as a bundle. A case is a bundle. Those cases were concurrent, and so they're treated as a bundle, and the jail time credit would come off both of those. But we're talking about separate and distinct offenses here. We're talking about the RSP, which didn't go away, and the new charges. The RSP, the probation revocation case, trumps the subsequent charges and for purposes of jail time credit.
And the problem with the defendant's or the appellant's case in this matter is there's a gap in the record as to whether or not the revocation arose out of the burglary and the theft charges. Is that your argument?
There's a lot of holes in the record, Your Honor.
That's a major one,
absolutely, Your Honor.
What is your response to the provision of the administrative code that says if a prisoner is serving two or more sentences concurrently, the adult parole authority shall independently reduce each sentence by the number of days confined?
I think that would apply if to one bundle, the burglary and theft together concurrently. That's where the adult parole authority has the opportunity to reduce credit against both those sentences.
Mr. Skandelis would say that his client was held awaiting a resolution of the violation of community control arising out of the RSP and concurrently for the burglary and theft arrest, which were resolved at the same time by the court.
I would disagree. He only gets jail time credit against one package, one case. These cases were separate, distinct. The burglary and theft did not arise out of his previous prior conviction, And he's not entitled to be treated differently just because he's committed more offenses than someone else.
If the court had sentenced this defendant consecutively, what would your argument be in that instance? We're in this in this posture because the aggregate term here is 24 months. But if it were consecutively imposed, the aggregate term would be 36 months.
This was essentially a consecutive sentence. The trial
court. That's not what the trial court intended when it imposed it.
Well,
but
I think
the effect of the calculation of pretrial credit, in your view, makes it consecutive. Am I right?
It certainly can be that way, and that's what was discussed at sentencing. Everyone was on board with making the RSP conviction simply go away and starting fresh with the new case. And so the issue wasn't litigated below. So in effect, the trial court was giving him a bit of a benefit by putting them consecutively because the 213 days didn't dispose of the entire sentence. So he got to resolve a bit of the...
Was this resolved by way of a plea?
No, the burglary and theft was a trial.
Okay.
Counsel, I think you misstated. You meant there was a benefit in running these concurrently, don't you?
I do. I'm sorry if I misstated that. There was a benefit in running them concurrently to the defendant.
So they did the 2 year on the burglary and theft.
Correct.
Concurrent with the 1 year imposed for the PV.
Correct.
All right. I guess I am having difficulty.
The probation violation. I'm sorry.
I'm having difficulty distinguishing that from your other example when you've got two offenses that are being, forget whether there's a probation violation, but two other independent concurrent sentences. And in that case, you're saying that the 214 days would come off the aggregate.
Here, the burglary and theft arose out of the same offenses. That they were a package because they came together. And the statute says that he's entitled to credit for any reason arising out of the offense he was convicted and sentenced for. So in essence, those two are treated as a bundle. The separate unrelated offense is the RSP conviction. It happened first in time. It was the defendant's... It was up to him to resolve it first or to continue the case until after his trial in his second case. So he can't be entitled to additional jail time credit for the choices that he made. If he had resolved the probation revocation, he would have been sitting in jail on the revocation sentence, period, end of story, and we wouldn't be here on this issue today. He didn't choose to do that. He waited. He continued both cases. And once the verdict came back guilty in his new charges, the burglary theft case, that's when he agreed to the probation violation. The court sentenced him in that case. They took jail time credit in that case. And the sentence for the burglary and theft was run concurrently with the remainder of the sentence on the RSP revocation case. This defendant should not be entitled to different treatment. That's what the defendant is seeking today, is a rule that would place him in a better position simply because he committed his offenses within the same county. If he had committed the offense in another county, the burglary theft in another county, we wouldn't be here because this court has ruled on that issue. He shouldn't get the benefit. There is no equity violation. There's no equal protection violation in this case. As to the administrative rules, I don't think the administrative rules should be read to conflict with the statute. The Section F that he's relying on is there to effectuate the intent of the legislature. And the legislator has spoken that jail time credit is offense specific. Furthermore, other provisions of the administrative code specifically say that the trial court is in charge of allocation of jail time credit, the determination of how much and where it gets credited, against which case it gets credited. The prison has no independent authority to come in and reallocate jail time credit. Their duty is to allocate the jail time credit per the instructions of the trial court, and that's what is being done in this case.
Ms. Vaughn, how does F not conflict, though, by saying if it's a concurrent sentence, then the parole authority shall independently reduce each sentence for the number of days. How does that not conflict with
argument? I don't think there is a conflict, because we're still talking offense-specific and case-specific, because it says confined for that offense.
It says sentences. I'm talking about the Regulation F.
Correct.
Two or more sentences, the authority shall independently reduce each sentence.
Sentence.
For the number of days confined.
For that offense, which is the singular at the end, which tells me that, like the statute 2967191, this provision is bundle specific. He's got the burglary and the theft convictions arising out of the same offense. That's where this provision would apply. It doesn't mean that the adult parole authority has some sort of inherent power to reallocate jail time credit. And especially in this case, when we don't have a record.
Well, let me put another example to you. Say an individual commits one crime and he's in prison or incarcerated, detained, let's say, and then commits another crime while in detention, an assault on a prisoner, you know, some other within the institution, and is charged and indicted for that. But he's still being held on the first crime for his detention. And it resolves itself so that at one point he pleads guilty to both crimes. I would think, under the provision just read, he would not get credit for the entire time he remained in detention against the second crime that he committed in detention. He would only get credit against that from the date he was incarcerated for that particular.
Right.
Is that an example that helps us here?
I think if he's incarcerated from point A to point B and then new charges attach, I think that the entire jail time credit would go to A. He's not getting out because of A, because of these first initial charges. All that credit goes against the one case, and you start fresh with the second charges.
And no credit against the second case.
No charges. Unless there could be some factual disputes where he could get out and then come back in.
How does that square with the, I know that's not our problem here, but I'm trying to figure out examples of when this section of the code applies.
I think the administrative rule, Section F, I think that applies when you have one case with concurrent sentences for example, two charges, two or more charges with one case. I don't think it applies to multiple cases. And that's a procedural posture we're in this case, multiple unrelated cases.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank
Ms.
you,
Bond.
And I would ask the court affirm.
Mr. Skandalis, your time has expired, but you can take a minute to respond if you choose to.
Thank you. Your Honors, let me emphasize several points. First, the statute and rule are clear on jail credit. To make this very simple, if you commit an offense and are held on that charge for that offense, you should get those days credit against the sentence imposed on that charge. It seems very clear from the statute. It seems very clear from the rule. And is also consistent with what Workman versus Cardwell tells us and what White versus Gilligan says. But second, why does the probation violation control if the defendant is held on both charges? There's nothing in the law that says the probation violation charges trump. It is only the state's interpretation of it.
We don't know whether apparently based on the state of the record, whether the probation violation arose out of these two offenses. And isn't that kind of a problem if we have to assume or presume the regularity of the proceedings without some evidence in the record to the contrary?
What we do know from the record is that the defendant was placed on community control. He was on community control only a couple of weeks before new charges were filed. We do know from the sentencing hearing the defendant, after he's convicted, admits to the violation. And it appears that the only violation that is discussed at the time of sentencing is the commission of the new charges. He admits to those charges, and then the court finds that he is in violation and sentences him. But third, very, very quickly,
because we keep getting back to this idea of we're rewarding the defendant by giving him credit, and that's not the case here. A court sentences the defendant based upon the nature and number of incidents. It modifies the sentence based upon the nature and number of incidents. But second, the defendant has a right to receive jail credit by statute, by rule, and by constitutional mandate. He is not receiving the benefit of that. He's not being rewarded for that. The court can modify the sentence to make it as long or short as the court thinks is appropriate, and then he gets jail credit because he's entitled to that as a matter of law. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The case is submitted. I believe both counsel were in the courtroom when I announced that the chief is obviously not here this morning, but has read the briefs and will be fully participating in the deliberations on this case, and would also welcome Justice Stratton's mother, who has patiently listened to all of the counsel's very effective arguments today. With that, Marshall will adjourn.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye.